Hello, Mr. Walter.
Yes, Mr. Davis.
How's it
So,
going, man?
today's been a pretty good week. I've been grinding it out and rededicated myself to some serious guitar practice. My goal is to practice 10 hours a week. Might not seem like a lot, but
Dude, that's a great goal.
it's hard to get that much in, it's
No,
but
10 hours a week, that's a lot of guitar.
I mean, we're talking practice, learning on new skills and things. And I mean, I really got derailed when I came to Nashville because one of the first producers I worked with, you know this story, told me that my licks were grade school level. He had ulterior motives for saying that. He wanted to actually he didn't realize that I was the one playing the guitar, and he thought he wanted to be my producer and produce the
Yeah.
track for me. And he thought by insulting the production that I would come his way, but he didn't realize that the guy sitting right next to him was the guy playing the guitar. And then when he realized that, he didn't even apologize. He's just like, "Oh,
Yeah,
asshole."
yeah,
Sorry.
there's
This is a PG podcast.
we try, don't we?
So
Yeah, and there's just so many players there, man. There's so many incredible guitar players in Nashville that
oh yeah, sure. Yeah,
it's
did you see the CMAs? I didn't know any of the names. There were musician of the year. There were some musician of the year. The winner was a female fiddle player, and there were I think three or four. Let's see if I can find it. Three or four guitar players. CMA Awards 2020. You might know some of these names. Let's see.
I didn't even watch it this year. It's a shame. I
Well,
probably.
I've never watched it. I should have. New artist of the, let's see. Musician of the year. Paul Franklin, of course. He's probably on steel guitar. He's probably nominated every year.
Yeah.
Rob McNally,
Sure.
guitar. You know that name?
Yeah, he.
Ilya Toshinishki, guitar. And Derek Wells guitar were the five that were nominated.
I don't even know who half those people are.
But you know the Rob McNally name?
Oh, sure.
But Derek
Yeah.
Wells and Ilya Toshinitsky, you didn't know?
No. Rob was Seeger's guitarist for a long time.
Okay. The
Turbo
only one
Bob Seeger.
was Paul Franklin because that's my main instrument, pedal steel. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's like the Bruce Lee of pedal steel guitar too, man.
Yeah.
There's really nobody even compare Paul Franklin to. He's like Jordan-esque on the pedal steel. It's frustrating to try to play one too, man, because when you watch other pedal steel players, it looks so simple.
I love playing it. I just love playing it. I mean, I'm not a virtuoso by any stretch of the meaning of the word virtuoso, but it's a lot of fun to play. And I have one
Yeah.
in my studio. In fact, you can see it. I can see it right behind me with a bunch of papers on it. The red thing there, it's got a cover on it. That's my pedal steel.
Some of my favorite stuff is the pedal steel playing on the old Hank Williams Sr. songs, man. Just crying, whining pedal steel. That's some great stuff. And I would imagine at the time it was happening that that was probably some pretty space age stuff that guy was doing. Yeah, it has its own unique sound.
But it kind of fell out of favor. I mean, I think pedal steel, about the same time that the upright bass. Because I remember there was a pastor, or the Lundstrom. Anyone from South Dakota will, and a church person will remember the Lundstroms. Lowell Lundstrom was a traveling musical family evangelist, and when he first started, I think I still have the card. He had his brother played upright bass because he was a country player. He had been playing in bars, and then he had a salvation experience, and he left it all there behind, and he started doing that kind of music in churches, and he had a pedal steel player back in the day. And I have a card, I still have it somewhere, of one of the early Lowell Lundstrom things where he had his brother playing upright bass, the big box bass, and he had a pedal steel player, but it wasn't much longer, and his brother was playing electric bass, and there was no pedal steel player.
Yeah.
I think pedal steel kind of became not cool in mainstream country. Maybe
right. Now it's everywhere again.
Yeah, well, you got guys like Robert Randolph that's just taking it outside. I love Robert Randolph. I follow him on Instagram. I see his posts almost every day. Grew up in the Black Pentecostal Church, so his approach is definitely not country.
You know, yeah, lots of distortion and stuff on it.
Wah wah pedal and all kinds of stuff that, you know, those old school country guys don't like that. You know, that's
not. You always have the purists that say if it doesn't sound exactly like it did 50 years ago. It's a frustrating thing with blues, man. It's like if it doesn't sound like Muddy Waters, then you have the purists that'll say that's not blues. And usually the ones that scream that the loudest are the ones that can't play an instrument. You know, they're always the self-proclaimed experts on it.
I think it's the same thing with when it comes to jazz. I mean, jazz musicians complain that the golden age of jazz, which was in the 50s and maybe the 60s, you know, when all, you know, Coltrane and Miles Davis and Bill Evans and so many of those guys from back in the day, and Bird, you know,
yeah,
the bebop era. And that's what a lot of people think. If it doesn't sound like that, it's not pure jazz. And you got some phenomenal. There's a guy who plays B3 organ, Matt, the keyboard player at church, told me about him. Corey, I was watching him. He's from Snarky Puppy. He plays with Snarky Puppy and a bunch of other things. Corey Henry is a B3 player. Grew up in the church, still plays in the church, but he's in Snarky Puppy. Have you listened to much of their stuff? I mean, they're amazing.
Yeah, man. I did a gig with Bob Lanzetti, the guitar player for Snarky Puppy. I did a gig with him last December here in Madison.
Wow.
Yeah, he was. His girlfriend's from here.
Really? From Madison?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know if they're still together or not, but yeah. He dates a local doctor's daughter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Madison just keeps punching above your weight. You just, you know.
We do pretty good with what we've got. But no, it was a blast of a gig. We played all kinds of like Neil Young and Hendrix and stuff like that. We didn't have a list. We just kind of winged it. He's a great guy. Great player too, man. Yeah, Snarky Puppy's amazing. I think they won a Grammy. Probably one of those.
I wouldn't
Grammys
be.
That, one of the non-televised Grammys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like some of the best musicians, they win Grammys and you don't even know that it's like a. That they even have a Grammy for that. Like you never see who wins the Blues Grammy or any of that stuff.
They won three, according to this. They won in 2014 for R&B performance. They won in 2018 for contemporary instrumental album. And they won in 2017 for contemporary instrumental album. So 2 years in a row, they got that category. I mean, they're some of the best musicians in the U.S., I think.
Sure.
Now, I mean, there are many, many great musicians, but they're really right up
there. Oh, yeah. Those guys are incredible.
So, yeah, so partially due to your urging and your playing on the B3 on your and locally there. Have you ever played your guitar through it yet? Have you?
I'm going back tonight, man. That's going to happen tonight. I've been really, really happy with everything that's happened so far.
You know, B3, for those of you are two viewers that we have right now, welcome. B3 organ is an organ that rotates, the speaker rotates. True B3 has speaker, or Leslie, I'm misspeaking. The Leslie speaker, which came with a B3, but it's a separate, is where it's got a horn that rotates, and then it's got a bass speaker that rotates, and that gives you the Doppler effect. Like when a train comes by and the pitch goes up as it comes near you and goes down. You know, that's called the Doppler effect, which maybe you learned in school, which I did. Remember when I learned that in, I think in high school, or maybe Doppler effect. Sounds so cool. I think it's named after a guy named Doppler. Anyway, so the rotating speaker gives you that kind of a sound. And the Leslie definitely was a key part of that sound. And but you can also put a guitar through it.
Like Hendrix did on Little Wing.
So I ordered a brand new Leslie speaker. Should be coming in within the next week. I'm going to have it in my studio, and it's not the full size ones that are like 800 pounds. It weighs 80 pounds. What does a full size Leslie speaker weigh? Probably 250.
Dude, I would guess 350 pounds.
You know, and they used to lug those things. If you had a B3 organist in your band, or maybe even still, he'd want he his if he's going to have his gear there, he needs his Leslie speaker, and you got to lug that in. And even the B3 organ itself isn't too light either, I don't think. Have you ever moved one of those?
Oh yeah, I've moved the B3 and the Leslie before.
How much does the B3 weigh?
It's about six people heavy.
Imagine every gig, the keyboard player, that's his gear. Versus,
Yeah,
you know, the
man.
guitar player, or
But
even
it,
a
but
horn player. Imagine you got a trumpet player. All he's got to bring in is his tiny little case. That's all he
like
needs.
singers, man. We used to get so
But
mad
singers.
when I started kind of having bands. As a teenager, we never liked the singer. Before I started singing, we would be so mad because it was like they'd show up with a microphone and never help move gear. It just creates forever bad blood, you know what I mean? I don't miss those days.
Not even helping with the gear.
Yeah, most of the singers we had were like that. And so I got wise and started doing solo acts, and now I move all the gear.
I played
Showed them, didn't I?
I played in a band in South Dakota where we had this guy who joined us for a while and subbing in, Dennis, and he didn't help move any gear. I think he said he was too old. He said,
That's a surefire way to weaken your spot in a band. Don't help carry things.
yeah, because there's a lot of gear to move back and forth, you know, and then you add more, and you got a light show, and you got the speakers and the
Yeah.
board and the
And
mounter top.
if you don't help move gear the first time somebody suggests you get kicked out of the band, it's not going to be hard to convince everybody else.
Sure.
Like, yeah, we'll get somebody that doesn't play as well that works harder. I was always told when I got started that that's the part you get paid for. You play for free and they pay you to lug equipment around. And I believe it's true. It's been my experience at least.
You play for free and you get paid for moving your gear around.
Yep, you get paid to drive to the show and to move gear.
Well, as I told you, we're probably going to get a van. And I talked to the guy today. I'd forgotten I have my credit. I'm going to try to buy it on payments, get a loan on it rather than pay cash. I could pay cash, but I think I'll just get the loan to serve the cash. And diesel van. They call it Sprinter class van.
Dodge.
It's a Dodge, but a Mercedes-Benz also has a Sprinter, but a Mercedes-Benz is really expensive. This has a Mercedes-Benz diesel engine in it, the one I'm looking at. and convert it to a a bunk. I saw one online for sale, same size, and it had five bunks in it, and for traveling musicians. Of course, that particular one, I think they wanted 40 or 50 grand for. This one's an older one, but it was less than 100,000 miles of a diesel engine, so we're going to have to do a lot of gigging to wear it out. That's our goal, Jimmy, next year.
Wear out a whole diesel engine in 1 year?
Not 1 year. No, just wear it out. Wear it out in our careers. That'll be hard. It won't be that easy.
Yeah, those things are indestructible.
400,000 miles, maybe.
I like it. Does Toyota make a diesel? They don't.
They do. Probably do. Got that Toyota work truck, which is working hard.
No, that's why I asked, because Toyotas always last forever. If they make a diesel, they probably get 5 million miles or something.
Yeah, well, this particular truck, if I end up getting it, somebody might buy it out for me. We'll see. While I'm messing around trying to get my credit unfreezed, I forgot that my credit was frozen, which is, I think, an important thing to do, so that people can't steal your identity then, because they can't access your credit. So nobody can get my credit report unless I unfreeze it. And so I've forgotten every time I try to get a loan. What's that? You need to freeze your credit, man.
Yeah, I do.
If you're not doing that, it's free. There's three credit rating agencies, Equifax and Experian, and can't remember the other one. You have to do it individually with all three. You can't just go to one place that I know of. And I mean, there are subscription services that help you with that and probably would help you freeze it. But you pay monthly for some kind of subscription service that monitors your credit. I think that's completely bogus. Because I use Credit Karma. My nephew turned me on to Credit Karma, which is a free app on my phone. And they give me updates all the time when my credit rating changes. It didn't cost a cent. So you definitely don't have to pay for credit monitoring, in my opinion. So, but I'm going to have to unfreeze my credit so that they can get credit report and approve me for this truck so that we can. And then we're going to have to rebuild it, take all the seats out of it. It's got... Well, you saw it, the fabric on the seats. It's still got all the seats. It probably seats like 10 people.
Yeah.
And all the seats are still in there, but they were like very loud and obnoxious. I can't even imagine if that was even fashionable in 2006. This is 2006.
They're pretty funky.
Pretty funky fabric.
We should take the kids to the zoo before we take them out.
Yeah. So take those out, put some bunks in there. And... because I was looking at an RV first, but I'm so glad this would be so much better. RV would be so hard to park in front of venues, and imagine if you had a venue in a city trying to find a place to park a 35-foot RV.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Fuel. Oh, man. A diesel, smaller van would be so much better.
Yeah, I agree.
But, the black water and the gray water, and all that, having that in an RV, and then I was reading up on it. The black water is from the toilet, and you got to drain that, and the tanks aren't overly huge. I mean, if you use it a lot, you're going to fill it up, right? And then you got to find a way to drain it, and it could get plugged up, but you got to use single-ploy toilet paper, and I'm like, man, I don't know if I want to deal with all this. And then I ran across – actually, I was watching HGTV, so now I can make myself feel good about watching HGTV. There was a company that was doing mini homes or something, and they put this this toilet in there that incinerates everything, including including number one or number two liquid. It'll incinerate it all down to like a couple tablespoons of ash. So, like, if you go on a two-week tour, maybe you have to empty that once, and it's just ash. And so you have these liners, disposable liners, that you have in the thing, and then when you're done, you hit flush, and that liner gets sucked into the chamber, and it gets incinerated at a super high temperature, like 2,000 degrees. It incinerates everything, including the liner, I suppose, and the toilet paper or whatever. And you need gas. You need propane hooked up to it, of course. Some sort of electrical, I suppose. And you no black water. No need for black water.
It's amazing.
Why would anybody going forward, once this is invented and it seems to work properly, why would anybody even entertain messing with that black water?
Yeah. Yeah, it's way better.
I mean, I grew up on a farm. I know what manure smells like. And, you know, and you got to empty it out. And I've seen picture videos of them empty it out. And it gets plugged a lot. And then you got to deodorize it. And what a nasty, nasty thing just to have that. And then you run out of water. You got to fill up the water again. Now, if you have gray water where you have water tanks for, I mean, most RVs have three tanks. They have fresh water. They have gray water, which is used dish sink water and shower water, which you can literally open the tap, one article I said, and let it run out, dribble out the back of your RV while you're driving down the road. I mean, it's just, you know, just the water that we use to wash your body or wash the dishes. I'm not advising that, but apparently it's, you know, it's not toxic or anything. And then you got the black water, which you have to go into a particular dump spot. And what an, I mean, you get to plug up and you got to find the right place to dump it. And I don't want to deal with all that. I'm just going to get the incinerator special.
I want an incinerator for my house.
Yeah, didn't you have a plumbing issue in your house?
Oh, man, there's always something with plumbing because there's like eight or nine water maples in my yard. And then there's four or five at my mother's house. We own that house, too. And water maples do two things. They provide shade. Well, they do three things. They provide shade. They bust water lines and they fill gutters. And so I have an ongoing problem. And as long as we have that many water maples, it's always going to be an issue. Every couple of years, man, I got to get in there and cut roots out and replace a section of line. And it's, I got to play the plumber.
Yeah. Plumbing is a serious thing. I mean, so. Yeah, I mean, that one RV I was looking at getting, I mean, it was a good deal, but it was an old RV. It was, it only had 65,000 miles on it. It was an old retired couple. But the decor was, I think it was a 90s RV, if I remember. Had a generator and everything. I mean, another thing, too, you know, having a generator, because you want 110 volt to plug in your phone, and, well, you could do that with 12 volt, but, you know, microwave and all that other stuff. I would think today you would have just run it off, put an alternator on the, it's a diesel engine, it can take the load, and just have batteries, Tesla batteries. Do you know, okay, talk about Tesla. Do you know what Tesla launched in the last few days? Tesla has launched a tequila.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems kind of out of his wheelhouse a little bit.
Well, you should see the bottle. The bottle is really cool, unique design. Very sharp angles. I mean, he's apparently it's sold out. I mean, it sold out in a couple hour or two. I mean, the guy's got a brand. He's got fans. I mean, he raised, like when he came out with that futuristic looking pickup or truck, which I thought was super ugly, all flat panels. Did you see that? For $100 bucks, you could reserve a delivery of one like 2 years in the future. And just with that stint, he raised like $35 million.
I like Elon.
Well, I like him too. I'm not dissing him. I'm just saying he's a phenomenal businessman and marketer. I mean, you say, I'm going to come out with this product. I haven't finished designing it yet, or I don't even made it. But if you want to order it, you can reserve your spot. Just send me $100. And there's no obligation that you have to buy it, or there's no obligation that I'm actually going to send it to you. But send me $100. And he gets $35 million raised from that. Now that's a guy that's got a brand, and that's a guy.
How many people can do that?
Not too many. So he's got the brand awareness, so he can do it. And so he launched a tequila based on what that article that I saw, and he's a disruptor for sure. You know, I wonder why
he's moving too.
Yeah,
he's going to Texas.
Oh, yeah. He's moving to Texas. And who else is moving? There was
Rogan.
Rogan is moving to Texas, too, or Florida. Is he moving to Florida or Texas?
I'm not sure. It was Texas early on.
Yeah. But
there's a lot of them kind of getting out of
California.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's like, I don't know about California, but New York City has been considered that it was going to die, and you know, a lot of taxes in New York City. I mean, you have a city estate tax, city income tax. When I lived in New York City and worked for Mitsui back in the day, you have a state income tax. Well, you have a federal income tax. You have a state income tax, and you have a city income tax. I mean, you get taxed up to Wazoo. I think the tax rate is the highest in New York City of any municipality. Income tax on your income. But yet, and they're saying that they're always saying New York is gonna crash. But the draw of it, I mean, there's only one place like it. And I was reading it all the other day. It said New York ain't dead. Don't even think about it. It's going to change. It's changing. It's a renaissance, but it's coming back just as hot as ever. So maybe the same thing with California, or not. I don't know. California's a whole state. It's not a city.
So, well, California doesn't have the $1 slices of pizza. It doesn't have the balance that New York has. When I was up here with a songwriter friend, it was like, dude, everything's so expensive, but they have these, you can get full off of this one slice of pizza for a dollar. It's like the best pizza ever. It's all about balance. That's what New York is going for.
I haven't lived there in years. I used to live there in the 90s. And I that experience, I have very fond memories of that. I mean, I live in the Upper East Side. I'd move back in a heartbeat. I mean, I don't know if I could afford the apartment that I had back then. No.
Yeah.
A lot more money than what I was paying then.
Yeah, it's probably about eight grand a month now.
Probably. I paid just under, I think I paid $900 a month for a efficiency. One big room was like 20 foot square, and then a kitchen and bathroom was off of it. And it was the fifth floor, and it did have an elevator, so it wasn't a walk up, but it was an old building, pre-war. I think it was a pre-war building. Elevator was so, you know, I usually took the stairs because the elevator was so slow. You'd press the button and wait for it to come. You could have already been to your apartment by the time I got there. Driver, right? So
right.
Wait. Or if I was really tired, of course, I'd wait for it. But after a long day, I'm like, oh, man, I can't climb those stairs. But, yeah, I mean.
Well, you have to walk a lot in New York, too, man. You have to walk and walk and walk and walk and walk.
It's great. It's great. I love walking the streets there, and it's changed. I mean, it was on the 83rd and the East Side, 83rd Street, between 3rd and Lexington, and now it's pushed up into, you know, you don't want to go above 90 because that was kind of the bad area. Now it's pushed up to 120. The gentrification is pushed up further north into Harlem and whatnot, and more expensive. But, you know, live music and recording studios, you know, back in the day, it used to be a haven for recording, but the real estate's so expensive that all the recording studios are leaving. It's hard for music. You know, most musicians, unless you're in the 0.1%, you struggle financially. So it's hard. To you know, there were a lot of great studios in New York City. I have the piano that was used in the studio where they created Kinda Blue, Miles Davis, the piano.
Really?
I have the digital representation of it.
Oh. I was gonna say, damn, you never told me that.
I have it on my, it's the digital representation.
I was like, wow, man, you'd think you would have told me about that, but.
Yeah, I don't know which studio it was, but it was in Midtown Manhattan somewhere that they recorded that studio. I have to look that up. But the day before they closed the studio and they were going to demolish everything, this particular company, small company that just does plugins, went in and recorded the basic you know, every key, you know, hard, soft, you know, that's, I don't know, there's different.
Yeah.
And then you extrapolate between each one. That's how they do it. It's sampled. It's the way music is done on a computer. They sample it. It could be a horn. It could be a trombone. It could be a trumpet, any instrument. It's an actual instrument. I mean, it's two types of ways of having digital instrumentation. You can synthesize it, where you have a synthesizer that tries to make it sound like a piano or whatever you're going after, or a horn. And they still haven't gotten to the point where, you know, by saying, well, this is what it sounds like, we're going to try to recreate that. But a much better way is to use samples, where you actually have, like we have, right, the horn section. We used it on one song. I don't remember what song. I bought the horn. They had studio musicians from in New York City come in and play all the horn parts, and they've got all these different choices. It's called Blue. Might be called Kind of Blue. It's the setting. It's kind of dark. It's I know I had my friend Mark here, and he didn't like it. He's a keyboard player. He's a piano player. He thought that particular keyboard, which they actually sampled from the piano that was used on that Kind of Blue album, which was the piano that was in the studio, he thought it sounded too dark. And so we found another one. I have other ones in there. Alicia Keys has a sample one, her piano. She could buy that. I've always wanted to get that. I haven't gotten it. Whatever piano she has, it's the Alicia Keys special. So you can have Alicia Keys piano in your studio for like $100. That's about what those plugins cost, about $100. And you have the sound of all these great, great.
Like $100 a piece?
$100 per, what do you mean? Yeah, per software package. Was that what you're asking?
Well, no, like a package would have like the Kind of Blue piano and other.
Well, no, I think I paid close to $100 for the Kind of Blue piano, just that one. And I think, what would Alicia Keys be? What is hers? Probably about $100. Alicia Keys for Native Instruments, $99.
Wow. That can get expensive. You go getting a bunch of patches.
Well, that's the thing. Patches, that's the better term. Yeah. You know, Son of an Icon, developed in cooperation with Alicia Keys herself. 17 gigabytes of samples, 12 velocity layers per key. So they have 12 different velocities on each key. Danish sample specialist Thurman Scarby. Oh, I have some of his stuff. Scarby. Oh, yeah, I have some of his stuff that I really like. An impulse response expert, Ernest Chalakis, created a virtual piano that meets her professional standards and embodies the soulful sound that has become her trademark as a superstar. This is the piano sound that has helped Miss Keys win multiple Grammys and reach the top of the charts. So, you know, $99, you can have Alicia's piano in your studio. Yeah, so that's about what they go. I think I'm pretty sure the one is called, I know it's Blue. I think it's Kind of Blue in it. Let me just check it.
The what one a great that, album.
Oh, yeah, I listen to that almost every week. My Sunday afternoon chill. Piano in Blue, that's what it's called. It's called Piano in View, Blue is the name of the samples. It's from Cine Samples. And it's only $49.
Wow. How's Alicia Keys stuff cost more than Miles stuff? Garbage.
Who knows? Who even knows? It's $99. They reduced it to $49. Man, I got ripped off because I think I paid $99. Man.
What a jip.
Oh man, you can, you know, it's a prop you especially come. I usually wait to buy samples on Black Friday time, which is coming up, you know, just a couple more weeks now. And that's when all the software, the recording software plugin guys reduce their prices. And because it doesn't cost them anything, right? Each
Right.
and every sale doesn't cost a penny because they've already developed the software. All I have to do is deliver it to you. So whatever it costs for them to have Wi-Fi or whatever, which is probably they already have it. So there's no additional cost. 100% of every sale is profit on this type of a thing. So, you know, they can have 70% off, you know. Maybe the Piano Blue is probably a Black Friday sale at 49. That's probably what that is. It's probably because a lot I see a lot of emails have already marked stuff down and trying to get the sales going ahead of time.
Yeah,
But
we keep threatening to upgrade our phones on Black Friday to see what kind of deals they have.
you know, but it's as a sound producer, it's tempting because they, you know, hey, get this plugin, get this VST, get that, get this AU plugin. It'll make you sound like,
Yeah, and it's never ending, man.
yeah, never ending. So it's not about, but it's not about the gear. It's about the ear. Who's
Sure.
was that? Miles Davis. Somebody, some famous artist said that. It's not about the gear. It's about the ear.
It's so right, man. Good engineers can do more with a four track than somebody with a 10 ear with all the equipment in the world.
And not just engineering. I mean, even you know, a guitar. You know, you don't have to buy a $10,000 Les Paul custom Gibson custom shop Les Paul,
Right.
or whatever your flavor would be. I mean, we've talked about this before, but I the when you see the gear rundowns by the best players, they often don't even know what they're playing. They have to when they
They
do.
usually don't.
When the Premier Guitar does it, and I love watching those videos because I learn a lot, and helps with my gear lust. You know, I gotta get this one. Oh, so and so, you know, says there Bramhall, Daryl Bramhall the second says that this is the best Shinee. What was the I can't think of it that Hendrix loved to use.
The Univibe.
Univibe, yeah. The best Univibe is Shinee, which I think originally made the Univibe, but it costs $1,300. Daryl Bramhall says that's the one to get. And according to the patch, it sounded really, really good too. But it's $1,300. And the pedal is huge. If you try to put it on your pedal board, it would take up half your pedal board. So,
That's big money, man. $1,300, you can get a guitar and an amp.
yeah.
Good ones. And make it go. It's just a never ending sea, man. You can spend millions
Yeah,
on
you know.
that stuff. And there's guys that do.
But a lot of the ones that I, you know, of course, Bramhall, you know, he's a great player and a great writer, and you know, his dad played drums with Stevie Ray's brother, if I remember right, and he was a bit younger, but he hung out with all those guys. He's played with Clapton. He toured with Clapton for a couple of years. He and Derek Trucks toured with Clapton as a guitar player. Now he's probably a little more guitar savvy. This one that I watched was the gear rundown for Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Johnny Lang. It was all blues rock guys. Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Johnny Lang, Daryl Bramhall, and a woman. Can't think of it. Well, a lot of them weren't that sophisticated. You know, they didn't really, you know, this is not into boutique gear, you know, like Boss pedals or whatever.
Right.
It's run-of-the-mill stuff. Still sounded great, obviously. But Bramhall was one who definitely was, you could tell he was a connoisseur of pedals. He had pedals I'd never heard of and was really, really into it. So, you know.
Yeah, a lot of the blues guys, man, go the other direction where they're just like, get a good tube amp. Pretty simple.
Yeah, I like you t that story you tell about Buddy Guy.
Yeah, man.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I met him at the Blues Fest in Indy, and he was being polite talking to me, and I said, what kind of or he said, what kind of rig do you have? Because I told him, I said, I'm a guitar player too, and I have a blues band. And he said, well, what kind of rig do you have? And I said, I've got a Fender Strat and a Tweed Bassman. I said, because I try to capture that tone that you had on the old Chess recordings. And he said, I didn't have an effing Bassman during those days. And I said, well, what did you use? And he said, I used whatever I get my hands on. And then he kind of chuckled. He said, I don't even know if I owned a Strat. So it wasn't, you know, it never was about
recordings hold up today. Those Chess recordings, you know, they're doing it on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they sound great, man.
You know,
the guitar sounds are as good as anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And who knows, it was probably a silver tone guitar plugged into a toaster or something stupid like that. Who knows what he was using? He didn't remember. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. He could take whatever you handed him and plug it in and make it sound just like that now.
Yeah.
But so you're right, man. It's more in the ear and the hands. Our new kitten is trying to destroy my light right now.
Let's see. That's not Chloe. Chloe is the older one that...
That hates the fact that we got a kitten.
Yeah. Chloe wants to get away from her all the time, right? What's the young one? Name?
Bowie.
Bowie. Bowie.
Fired out of a cannon, man. Well, thing doesn't stop. It's trying to take out my light right now. It's like dangling.
I like being a pet grandparent.
Yeah.
But I get like to leave them behind when I leave.
Right, right. Especially Emma. Man, I have the sweetest dog, and she loves you to death.
Oh, I love Emma too, but I think living with her every day.
Yeah.
And getting that kind of attention and
a little too much affection.
Well, she wakes you. You got to keep your bedroom door shut, or she'll come in and wake you up, and then she'll leave. So one thing yeah. Now she'll stay with you. She sleeps with you.
Yeah.
But then, okay, it's 2 a.m. I got to make sure you're here.
Just checking on everybody.
Get on you, making sure you're here.
She does the same exact thing to the kids. I can always tell because at Memphis, and they always make sure their doors are shut, because she will go in there and wake them up like every hour on the hour. Like she's just checking to make sure everybody's all right. She's a little mother hen.
Great dog.
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, it's 43 minutes. We've gained and lost like 2 or 3 or 4 followers, like 5 times. So when our content is not enough to keep them engaged.
But it comes and goes, man.
Comes and goes. All right, everybody.
Until next time.
See you next time. Jimmy D and the Wolf Podcast.
See you, buddy.
Yeah.